You can thank me by taking that to the divinatory and finding out if it works. It won't change your grade, but I know your habit, and I don't want you using it inside the spire until you know for certain that it's functional.
She was right, of course.
Yes, Professor. Good. With your terrible performance today, I expect to see you back in my office next week. We will be going over some fundamentals, and you clearly haven't paid enough attention to them up to this point.
I tucked the circlet and the anchor away in my bag.
I'll be there.
Good.
She turned away from me without another word. Next, Mr. Widmore!
I found myself slouching as I walked toward the divinatory. I'm such an idiot sometimes. I didn't even deserve to pass that class. I should have told her about the anchor.
Failing the test bothered me, but the worst part of it was that I hadn't even admitted to Vellum that I hadn't completed the whole item while I was there.
She had to know, didn't she?
I could just tell her.
I failed the test anyway. Would she lower my grade further?
The dishonesty of omitting the information was grating on me, but I couldn't stand the idea of failing the class entirely because I confessed a new bit of information either. Non-standard solutions were second nature to me. Even cheating at one of the exams deliberately didn't really bother me. But I hadn't meant to cheat there. There had been no clever trick, no bizarre lateral thinking solution. No, I'd forgotten something pivotal to passing the test, and I'd effectively lied about it. That was different.
Did she know? Would she care?
I thought about that until I was all the way inside the divinatory's doors.
Hello, researcher waved. You're looking glum, Arbiter. Did you forget something?
I frowned. Sort of? How'd you know? Researcher gave me a sympathetic look.
Casting knowledge spells always takes out a part of me, and it's awful. Especially the bigger ones. I feel so... wrong.
Oh, she doesn't know what happened. She just associates losing memories with the idea of sadness in general. It was probably a characteristic of her being a knowledge elemental, but in spite of the miscommunication, I appreciated the sympathy. And in truth, I didn't really feel that differently. The idea of losing my memory was awful. Yeah, I'm glad I don't have to pay that cost when casting spells.
The elemental turned away with a sad look.
I wish I could get an attunement like yours, so I could cast spells safely like you do.
I felt a pang of guilt as I realized I just inadvertently made her feel worse. Sorry, researcher. I wish you could have one, too.
I pondered that for a moment.
What's stopping you?
She turned back and blinked at me.
What do you mean?
I considered for a moment.
I know you're a summoned version of a spire monster, but couldn't your original take a judgment? And if she did, wouldn't you benefit from it?
They don't let us take judgments.
She shook her head.
Half elementals, maybe, but pure ones, I don't know.
Half elementals? You mean?
Oh, sure. There are some out there, but I'm not one of them. I'm just a fragment.
I raised an eyebrow at that.
What's that mean?
A specific classification of elemental. Stronger than a figment, weaker than a gatherer or a harvester. We embody specific principles of our element.
And you are?
I'm a researcher, of course.
I nodded. Right. Help me research something.
Of course,
she smiled.
How can I help?
I showed her the circlet. I need to test an item that only works inside the spires, outside of the spires. Researcher looked it over.
I see what you're trying to do. Return bells work by drawing on a specific concentration level of ambient mana. There are a few school facilities that are designed to specifically mimic that effect. You can test normal return bells or something like that in one of them.
She gave me some directions, and I thanked her. I turned the circlet over in my hands, still feeling weirdly empty. Hey, researcher?
Yes, Arbiter?
Can I just stay and study in here for a little while?
Of course.
She paused and frowned, maybe finally picking up something in my tone.
Stay as long as you'd like. Nothing makes me feel better like learning.
I feel the same way. My words were mostly true, but entirely hollow.
Chapter 15. Replacements. I spent the next few days feeling like garbage. I knew intellectually that it wasn't worth worrying about what I'd done during the test. I'd failed anyway, after all, and there were far greater matters of import in my life. And it wasn't like I'd been entirely forthcoming with everyone about everything else in my life anyway. I wasn't above withholding information if I thought it was important. And graduating was important. My goals might have expanded lately, but that didn't mean I could give up on graduating. Still, I couldn't help shaking the feeling of disappointment in myself. Ultimately, I think it was because I'd let someone down that I actually respected. I was used to being a failure in my father's eyes. And my mother, well, I had no idea what she felt about me now because she hadn't seen fit to write me or visit. Vellum had always been critical of me, but she'd also been eminently fair. I think that was why I respected her as much as I did. And by omitting a little detail on that test, I'd violated a contract in my own mind. I didn't feel like I deserved her trust. But I also didn't have the confidence to just go and tell her about it. It was silly. I'd failed the test anyway. It wasn't like she could double fail me. Probably. Either way, that wasn't what I was worried about. I was just ashamed. It was fortunate that most of my finals were already over, otherwise my scores might have suffered during that time. Maybe it would have helped if I'd shared my feelings with someone else, but I'd never been good at that. Why am I so weak? I asked myself that question many times, but I never found a good answer. I still wasn't in a good frame of mind when Jin came to visit, and seeing him certainly didn't make things any better. Neither did his news.
"I believe we are both being followed."
I nodded to him. It was hardly a surprise at this point. I knew someone had broken into my dorm, and I'd figured out a plan for following the trail, but I hadn't followed it yet. I'd had too many other things going on. I also knew that Derek was having someone follow Jin. I wasn't sure if that was still what was going on, or if whoever was following me was also following Jin. Either way, it was worth finding out what Jin knew and looking into it further. "Do you know who it is, or why they're doing it?" Jin shook his head.
"No, but they appear to have countermeasures for my attunement."
"That implies that they've done their research on us, and that they have considerable resources." I rubbed my chin. "Okay, let's go find them." Jin blinked. I think I startled him.
"I didn't think you trusted me."
"I still don't. But I'm reasonably confident you're not involved in what I found. I'm in an awful mood, and I'm tired of waiting for potential enemies to act against me. I'd rather get ahead of this. You up for some walking?"
"Yes,"
Jin confirmed.
"I am."
"Give me a bit to get my things. I'll meet you by our dorms in around an hour or so." Jin nodded and headed out. By my things, I meant putting on Celice Lian, my sigils, and my demigauntlet. I was going loaded for a potential fight. The next thing I did was check in with Derek. "Are you still having someone follow Jin?" Derek shook his head.
"No. Jin was stuck in the hospital for so long that I told my contact to stop bothering with it. I've considered putting a tail back on him now that he's up and about, though."
"Why? Is he acting suspicious?"
"Because someone is still following him." Derek frowned.
"Well, that's awkward."
I sighed in agreement. "Yeah. I'm going to look into it. Can you help?"
"I'm busy. But use the stick if you need me."
I nodded. "Will do." Then I excused myself to go tell Karis where we were going.
"Do you want me to follow you?" Karis asked. "I'm not great at stealth, even with the mask."
I considered that, then agreed. "Give me a few minutes." It took me about a half an hour to put together a basic arrow of direction enchantment. It was a two-piece item, like a return bell. When active, the main item would show the user a glowing arrow that pointed toward the anchor. I threw it together in a hurry, so it was the weakest version of each of the runes. That meant the range was limited to about a mile, but I still thought that would be plenty. The concept was useful enough that I wanted to make more of them later, but this would be good for the moment. I kept the anchor in my bag and handed the detection item to Karis. "You can use this to follow us from a good distance away. If you see us, you're probably too close. Jin is pretty perceptive.
Are you expecting trouble?
Karis raised an eyebrow as he asked. Very possible. Karis grinned.
Good. Haven't seen a decent scrap in a while. Let me get my trouble coat.
I met Jin back at the dorms. Then we headed into my room.
What's the plan?
He asked. We start here. I pulled up the cut in the carpet, revealing the enchantment that someone had placed on my floor.
And that is...
Right. It was easy to forget that other people didn't necessarily read runes the way I did. It tells someone that we're here. Someone planted it here while I was away.
And we're going to ambush them when they show up?
I shook my head. No. I drew my sword, causing Jin to take a step back. Oh, sorry. Not attacking you. I'm taking this with us. After a moment of consideration, I re-sheathed Celestian and pulled out the Jaden box. Retrieve transference sword. I used that sword to cut the section of floor that had been enchanted. I'd used the other sword because Celestian had a chance of freezing the whole thing, which I didn't want to risk. Moreover, a cutting aura was more suited to this sort of job. Sawing at wood with a sword blade would have taken forever, but the transference sword's aura made it easy.
What are we doing with that?
Jin sounded curious now rather than scared.
Store transference sword.
The sword vanished. We're going to trace it back to the source. I hadn't just learned the Arrow of Detection spell to find Sheridan. I'd learned it because it could trace the connections between magic in general. Using Trials of Judgment to find Tristan was one option, but that wouldn't work as long as he was inside the spire. Tracing an enchantment to an anchor, though? That was basic stuff. I slipped the enchanted floorboard under my coat, and we headed out of the room, locking it behind us. Let's go find some trouble. I was pretty excited about using the Arrow of Detection spell at first. Seeing a glowing line that led straight toward whoever had planted the enchantment in my room sounded great in theory. In reality, though, we had two major complications. First, distance. The enchantment was much farther away than I'd expected. My initial Arrow of Detection spell didn't work at all. With some effort, I managed to cast the Carnelian level version rather than the Quartz one I'd been practicing. That found the target, but the spell still only lasted a few seconds. I didn't have the mana to cast that repeatedly. So after we walked for a bit, I stopped and changed my plan. I'm going to try to make a second enchantment on the floorboard that traces the first enchantment. It was almost identical in concept to what I just made for Karis earlier. I didn't have the second item to use as an anchor, but I didn't need to. The two items were already connected. I still couldn't make it stay on all the time, but by making it an enchantment, I could pass it to Jin and he could use his mana to activate it. That way, we could share the mana costs by passing it back and forth. The enchanting process was a little shorter this time since I didn't have to make the anchor part, and I'd just done something similar earlier in the day.
You sure this is going to work?
Jin asked. No, I admitted. But I want to know if it will. If it did, maybe I could eventually modify Trials of Judgment in a similar way. It would need to be a much more powerful version of the enchantment than I was capable of casting right now, but anything that fed into my longer-term plans like that was useful. The enchantment worked perfectly. I was almost surprised, honestly. I'd been in such a bad frame of mind after what happened with Vellum's class that I'd been beginning to doubt my abilities as an enchanter in general. Seeing that glowing line appear when I turned the enchantment on, there was something magical about that. I grinned and passed it to Jin. Try it yourself.
This rune?
He asked. Yeah, just a bit of gray mana. Jin activated the rune, then stumbled back a step in surprise. I laughed. Yeah, the arrow is a little startling at first.
Indeed,
he chuckled, straightening his stance.
Shall we go?
We followed the arrow for an hour, then another hour. I felt bad for Karis, who presumably was still following us. After a moment of questioning that, I reached into my pouch and tapped the anchor, casting an Arrow of Detection. I knew anchors could be traced in reverse now, so... Yeah, Karis was still behind us. I couldn't tell the distance without a different spell,
but it was clear that he was following the same path that we were, rather than being in the direction of the mansion or something. I gave him a silent thanks as Jin and I continued toward our unknown destination. Most of the walk had been relatively quiet, but I didn't mind that. I was getting used to working with Jin again, and I was pleased to have someone with a better stealth skill set for this kind of mission, even if I didn't entirely trust him.
"Any idea if we're getting close?" Jin asked.
I shook my head. "There's an evaluate distance spell, but I haven't learned it. It's on my list." We walked a little further. It was sort of nice, for a while.
"Corin, I'd like to apologize again. I should have been honest with you."
I sighed. I'd hoped this wasn't going to come up, but I'd known it was probably inevitable. "I still can't forgive you, Jin. I'm not sure if I ever will. But I'm willing to work with you on this, at least. We'll see how that goes."
Jin nodded.
"I will endeavor not to disappoint you again."
Our destination was not what I'd expected. I'd imagined a lot of possibilities. The Vice Chancellor's office seemed plausible. He was one of the few people who knew about what we were up to at all, and keeping tabs on us made a degree of sense. A mansion for a noble like Alorotheus or Lord Teft also seemed like a strong possibility. Both of them had the means and potentially the motivation. I'd even considered the possibility of running into my mother and learning that she was back in Velia and watching me from a distance. Also, I may have pictured a wizard's tower and a cave with a dragon. So when we exited the campus and headed into a residential area, I was a little surprised. I was doubly surprised when I found myself wandering into an area with run-down older apartment buildings. I was triply surprised when we headed into a dark alley adjacent to one of those buildings. I was not, however, surprised when the dark figures dropped from the rooftops and surrounded us. That part I'd been counting on. Jin reached into his coat. Someone in the front of the group, they were all wearing hoods and black neutral masks, so details were tough to discern, spoke up.
"There's no need for that. Don't start anything, and we won't need to either."
Jin slowly nodded and removed an empty hand from his coat, opening it to show that he was unarmed. The leader stepped forward. As they drew closer, I noticed a single green gemstone in the center of the forehead of the mask.
"You're a long way from school, kids. What brings you out here?"
Something was altering their voice when they talked, giving it an unearthly quality. Maybe the mask itself, if I had to guess. I decided to be direct. I tossed a glowing floorboard into the gap between them and us. "That?" The leader snapped their fingers. Another figure stepped forward, knelt down, and picked up the board. Then they walked back and whispered something to the leader. The leader spoke again.
"Ah, that. Just a routine bit of work for hire. Nothing personal."
I shrugged. "Okay, nothing personal then. Just point me toward whoever hired you." I heard a chorus of laughter from all around us. More laughter than there should have been, given that I could only see 6 people. I turned my attunement on, but that didn't reveal any invisible watchers. Every one of the cloaked people was attuned, though, and showing sunstone level. Not good odds, even if there weren't others hiding invisibly, and I couldn't be confident of that. My attunement couldn't break through stronger forms of concealment magic. Jin spoke up.
"Perhaps we can make some sort of arrangement?"
The leader waved a hand.
"Afraid not, friend. We have a reputation to maintain."
I frowned. "And who are you again?"
"My, my."
The leader tapped their mask.
"You haven't heard of us. We're the famous crew of the bravest of rogues, the Blackstone Bandit."
My jaw opened for a moment before I regained control of my expression. The train thief? The one based on a fictional character? Another series of laughs from around us. Fortunately, the leader did not appear offended by my statement.
"The very same. But I must assure you, our leader is both quite real and most proficient at the art of roguery."
Roguery? Is that an actual word? I was pretty sure that was not a word. It sounded made up. The leader waved a hand.
"That's not important. Either way, I must commend your efforts for making it this far, but your quest is at an end here. Run home, children.
Wait, Jin raised a hand. What if, hypothetically, we wanted to join the Blackstone Bandit's crew?
I shot Jin a look. I don't know what kind of look it was. I'm not sure there's a word for a combination of shock, horror, and admiration occurring all at once. I'm going with shorter relation. If they can make up words, so can I.
There were a series of whispers from among the hooded figures.
Well, we are honored that you wish to join our most prestigious crew. You'll need to wait a year or two. When you've graduated, we'll find you. There will be tests. You may or may not know when you've been tested.
Well, that was an interesting gamble, but it certainly didn't get us what we needed right now.
Another question occurred to me. Does your group have any relationship with the servants of the tyrant in gold?
The group went tense, and I realized I may have made a mistake. The leader simply folded their arms.
Now why would you ask something like that?
The original Blackstone, the fictional one, had a connection with the tyrant, yes?
Ah.
The leader made a hand signal, and the others seemed to relax.
Yes. That's all purely fictional, I assure you. We have nothing to do with those cultists.
I nodded. That was not what their reaction told me. I'd hit a nerve somehow. That didn't necessarily imply they were actually working with the tyrant, but there was clearly some kind of history there. I glanced from person to person briefly, but I didn't see any of the glowing marks on shoulders that Karis had warned me to look for. Just normal attunement marks in normal locations. That was good enough information for now. If they'd had the shoulder marks, I might have tried to signal Karis somehow to come in and do something, but for now, I didn't have enough information to make a move. And with at least 6 people, in their own territory, starting a fight without a good reason was a bad idea.
I don't suppose you could at least give us a hint about who hired you? Jin asked.
A hint?
One of the hooded people behind us said.
I love it. Go ahead, Jade. Give them a hint.
Ah, so the person in front wasn't the actual leader then. That made sense. It meant the actual leader was able to watch us without being watched in return, and lowered the risk that we'd attack them directly. Jade, the person I'd previously assumed was the leader, raised a hand to their mask, giving a look of consideration. After a moment, they said,
Someone with great power who may yet be your friend or your enemy, depending on how you play your hand.
That was an absolutely terrible hint. But I'd take what I could get.
Thank you. We apologize for intruding on your territory. We will leave you now,
Jin replied.
We didn't say you could leave,
Jade replied. We tensed. I almost reached for my sword.
Ah, just kidding. Get out of here, kids.
Jade waved a hand.
And walk safe. There are unsavory types about this late at night.
Jin and I headed back toward the dorms at a rapid pace. We did not want the Blackstone Bandit's crew to change their minds.
I'm sorry that we failed to learn the identity of our pursuers, Jin offered after a time.
I shook my head. We did. We just didn't find out who hired them. I'd call that a success.
Perhaps, he shook his head. But it doesn't feel that way.
It's progress, at least. We slowed down a bit when we got back to the school grounds. I turned toward Jin. Any ideas on who that clue might point to? He shook his head.
It could be any number of people. The with great power is the only true hint in my mind. That could be political, economic, or magical power, but it still narrows the field to a degree.
I nodded. I concur. We can most likely rule out other students and probably our teachers. Leaving powerful nobles as options, independently powerful attuned like Derek, and foreign powers like Karis or the Tyrant. We stopped before reaching the dorms to talk a bit more.
What are our next steps? Jin asked.
I frowned. I don't know. I'll talk to Derek and see if he has any ideas. Maybe he'd have some ideas on who might be connected with the Blackstone Bandit.
He doesn't seem like the type to work with thieves.
I shrugged. You never know.
It sounds like whoever hired that crew has either lost interest in us or decided to take a different approach. For the moment, I think we'd best just keep our eyes open and communicate if either of us learns anything. Jin nodded.
I can agree to that.
Good. I hesitated for a moment, then added, thank you. He raised an eyebrow.
For?
Coming to me about someone following us. I appreciate the information.
Of course.
He hesitated, looking like he wanted to say something more, then simply concluded with,
you're welcome.
It doesn't change what you did before, I added hastily. Jin shook his head.
I did not expect it to, but I hope that, perhaps over time, you can learn to trust me at least a bit again.
I drew in a deep breath. I'd like to, but I don't know. Jin gave me that crooked smile of his.
That's a better answer than you gave me before, at least.
It is, I acknowledged. Good night, Jin.
Good night, Corrin.
I met with Karis on the way back to the manor. So did you pick up anything I may have missed? I asked.
I wouldn't presume to know what you noticed, but there were a considerable number of additional members of their group still waiting nearby, both inside the building and atop it. That is not a small organization, Corrin, and I believe you found one of their bases of operations.
I frowned. Or that whole encounter could have been staged. I don't see why they would have had a monitoring device in that sort of location. It seemed like just an ordinary neighborhood.
Operating out of a seemingly ordinary neighborhood seems like a pretty good way of keeping your group of thieves from being obvious, Karis pointed out. It's not like they're going to have a big building that says Blackstone Land on it.
I chuckled, I suppose. Although given how lighthearted they sounded, I wouldn't be surprised.
Don't take their levity as a sign of weakness. They were well organized, professional. They had people with ranged weapons aiming at you at all times. You were wise to withdraw when you did.
That only made me more nervous. Any clues on who they work for? Karis shook his head.
No. Did you catch any names? I wasn't close enough.
Jade.
That's not a good sign.
I nodded. Because it's a gemstone name? I remembered what he'd told me before.
It might just be because they're mimicking the stories about the Blackstone Assassin, he offered. But I wouldn't want to bet on that. I'd advise you to stay as far away from those people as possible.
For what it's worth, I didn't notice any of those shoulder marks you told me about. Karis gave me an approving expression.
Good of you to check. Keep watching for those.
I will. We got back to the mansion without incident. Thanks for watching over me.
No problem. Get some sleep.
You too.
He shook his head. Not just yet for me. Karis cracked his neck. I'm still wearing my trouble coat, and I never got to use it.
I never found out what kind of trouble Karis got into that night. When he came back in the morning, his clothes were torn, and he was in the best mood I'd seen him in a long time. I asked him if he'd gone back to fight the Blackstone Bandits, but he just replied,
nothing like that, Corrin. Don't worry about it.
I didn't ask any more questions after that. I had a feeling that I didn't want to know the answers. I spent just a little bit of my time trying to research the Blackstone Bandits. Unfortunately, articles about their group were interspersed with so many references to their legendary namesake assassin that I couldn't find much reliable information. Derek told me that he didn't think they usually did work for hire, but he didn't know too much about them either. Most of what he'd heard was that they considered themselves to be heroic thieves, working against the corruption of large banking institutions like Haven Securities. That certainly explained the number of bank heists and train robberies that were attributed to them, but it was hard to tell if there was really only a single group or multiple groups using the Blackstone Bandits' name. I was leaning toward the latter since so many of the crimes seemed to be in Kaelford rather than Velia, and the Kaelford heists seemed to have slightly different methodology. While I found it fascinating to read about them, I couldn't justify spending more time on it. If they really were just hired to watch me for a while, it wasn't worth investing my time and minimal resources into trying to dig deeper. I'd have to find a way to figure out who had hired the Blackstone Bandits to follow me eventually, but for the moment, I had higher priorities. At the beginning of week 27, the entire student body was called to a meeting on the same grassy area where the orientation had been held.
"Good morning, students,"
Chancellor Wallace began. I hadn't seen her much during the year, but she still had a powerful presence on the stage.
"Congratulations on making it this far into the year. Your dedication to this point is commendable, but you're not quite finished yet."
She folded her hands, turning her head to scan from side to side.
"As I'm sure many of you remember, the traditional final exam for the first year as a whole involves a climbing expedition into the Serpent's Spire. Normally, this involves a group of 5 students entering with a teacher. Unfortunately, it will not be possible to hold that exam this year."
There was a murmur in the crowd. The Chancellor waved a hand.
"Quiet!"
It was surprisingly effective, nearly instant. I felt a tingling in the back of my mind. Some kind of mental attunement at work? Whatever the effect was, it was so brief that I didn't have a chance to analyze it or try to chase it out of my body. It was already gone. Out of curiosity, I activated my attunement. I immediately regretted it. I couldn't see the Chancellor's aura through the haze of thousands of others. I turned it right back off, rubbing my eyes. The Chancellor continued.
"The reasons for the change are unimportant, but they have required the implementation of a replacement exam. Over the next 2 weeks, groups of students will be sent to complete their final examinations. Vice Chancellor Bennett will provide the details."
She stepped back, allowing the Vice Chancellor, once again in a military-style uniform, to step up to the lectern to speak. The Vice Chancellor's expression was always stern, but he looked unusually grim today. His eyes showed exhaustion, and his jaw looked like he'd been clenching it tight. He took a deep breath before speaking. That probably wasn't a good sign.
"The Spire test is what normally separates students who are merely academically proficient from those who are truly ready for the next step in their training for service. You've all survived simulated Spire exams throughout the year, but a few hours in a test room can't show how you'd survive in a dangerous environment for an extended period of time."
The Vice Chancellor paused, taking another breath.
"For this examination, you will be broken down into teams of 5. Those of you who still have an existing team that has survived up until this point will retain that team. Your team will be assigned a second-year student and given a deployment date. On that date, you will be sent into a training facility to the north of campus. You will be given an assignment and 72 hours to complete it. You will be expected to pack equipment for surviving in the wilderness for 3 to 10 days. You will be briefed for your mission when you are on site, and mission-specific equipment may be provided to you at this time. This test will be a culmination of everything you have worked on this year. You will be graded not only on the successful completion of your mission, but also any casualties to your team, your efficiency, and your judgment."
He turned to the Chancellor, nodding to her. The Chancellor stepped back into position.
"Your deployment information should have been delivered to your rooms this morning. If you have not yet received it, you can check with the administration department. Deployment dates will vary, but they begin in 2 days. While you all have done well to reach this point, bear in mind that the last test will be the hardest, and you would be wise to earn any additional points you can through other means. Your graduation is not assured, but if you work hard, it is achievable. Good luck. You are all dismissed."
With that, we dispersed. Sarah nudged me.
"I'm going to go check my mail. Strategy session back at home in a few?"
I nodded mutely. We walked together toward the dorms for a few minutes, splitting off when our buildings were in different directions. I was still a little hesitant to go back to my old dorm room. Not because I had any real fear of assassins at this point, but because I still wasn't quite comfortable with the idea of running into Jin again. I was feeling a bit better about him after we'd done the whole thing with finding the Blackstone Bandits crew together, but there was a part of me that also felt like any sort of renewed trust in him was a trap. I needed to sort through that at some point, but I wasn't quite ready to talk to him again yet. And I definitely wasn't ready to potentially spend 72 hours with him during our next test. That was going to be challenging. Aside from Jin, I was still worried about the possibility that people were watching my room. I checked the area first, but I didn't see anyone overtly suspicious. I cautiously made my way inside. Nothing inside the dorm itself looked to have been tampered with, but I found multiple pieces of mail that had been slipped under the door. Most of it was junk, simply because I hadn't visited in a while. There were three things of note. First, I found the deployment assignments. Deployment date, snow, 8th, 4:13, 7 a.m. Platoon designation, Serpent Epsilon. Platoon assignment, Cadence, Corin, Enchanter. Cadence, Sarah, Summoner. Callahan, Marissa, Guardian. Wayland, Patrick, Elementalist. Delenn, Jin, Unlisted. Winters, Catherine, Student Supervisor. Students are expected to meet with their supervisor at the Beaufort train station at the date and time listed above. Tickets to the station nearest to your training area will be provided. Details on your mission assignment will be given when you reach the training area. It was snow 3rd, so he had less than a week before our deployment. We were probably in the 2nd or 3rd group, depending on whether or not they deployed people in overlapping groups or not. I didn't know if that was a good thing or a bad thing. Next, I had a few report papers listing my grades for various classes. I found the most recent overall report. Caden, Corrance, Enchanter, first year. Overall class ranking, 987 of 8,112. Phoenix Division rank, 188 of 1,564. Current point total, 584. Class scores. Magic Theory, 55, rank C. Understanding Attunements, 65, rank B. Mana Manipulation, 110, rank S. Physical Combat, 61, rank B. Introductory Runes, 75, rank B+. Elective, Art of Artifice, 30, rank D. Elective, Dueling, 70, rank B. General Tests, 118. My scores were pretty respectable. I still wasn't quite in the top 100, but I was in a healthy spot in the class as a whole. My mana manipulation score was amazing, though. That must have been what Professor Edlin had been talking about when she'd given me that ominous line about hearing about my score soon. I'd been worried about nothing. She'd just been talking about rewarding me with an extremely high grade. That was a relief. My overall grades still weren't going to be high enough to please Father, but I wouldn't have to be completely ashamed either. There were two remaining hurdles. The first was Spider Division. If our division hadn't reported anyone correctly, I'd lose 250 points, or nearly half of my total. I didn't think that would put me below the passing threshold by itself, but it would hurt. And more worryingly, our scores for this year would serve as our starting point for next year. I needed a plan for that as well. Starting out in a weak position for the following year was unacceptable. The second hurdle was this new exam. From the way the Chancellor had been talking, I suspected a poor performance would result in failing out of the school outright. Even a mediocre performance might include a significant point loss. That was also unacceptable. I needed successes both with Spider Division and the next test to ensure I had the best score possible going into the second year. But first, I had one more piece of mail. My dear Corin, as you have no doubt already heard, matters in Delanos have been somewhat tumultuous of late. I have been rendering what aid I can to their beleaguered government, and as such I remain indisposed for the time being. My hope is to visit you shortly after the conclusion of your school year. I will once again remind you to avoid any dealings with Karis Salirian. While I have been informed that he has been cleared from his criminal charges, he is nevertheless an extraordinarily dangerous individual. There are also some family matters I need to discuss with you, but that conversation will best be held in person and in private. You will be in my thoughts. Love, your mother. The letter's date indicated it was sent just a week ago, so fortunately, I hadn't left it sitting in my apartment for long. There was quite a lot to think about from that. Most of it I didn't want to think about, but it was too important to ignore. There had been an attack in Delenos just after I'd gotten out of the spire. The Grand Cathedral, a major center of worship, had been destroyed. Delenos was a theocracy, largely ruled by Katashi directly. They had an emperor and an empress, but those were largely ceremonial figures, at least in my limited understanding. Katashi and his priesthood had the real power. Mother had left for Delanos before that explosion had happened. Had that been a coincidence? Or was she involved? I couldn't discount anything at this point. Now that I knew my brother was involved with the kidnapping of Tenjin, it was theoretically possible that other members of my family could be involved in similar affairs. Moreover, Mother had approved the expedition in which Vera and Echion had entered the Serpent Spire. That meant she at least knew something about the God-Beast attunements. I didn't know how much she'd been told, but given the other facts, it was likely her knowledge was significant. Mother was also suspiciously powerful. She'd been in the council room during that vision I'd seen in the memory crystal Jin had given me, and she'd put up a good fight against Karras. She clearly had two attunements, and at least one of them was probably emerald level. As far as I knew, that put her in about the top 10 people in Velia in terms of raw power. I knew she'd spent many years in the military before I'd been born, but Father had always been the one who was obsessed with fighting ability. When, how, and why had she gotten that powerful? I hadn't even known she had a second attunement. She'd just been an elementalist when I'd been growing up. What was going on with her? I wanted some real answers. Unfortunately, she was abundantly clear that she didn't want to talk about family matters until we could see each other in person. Instead, I found Sarah and asked her to talk to me in private. "Read this real quick." I handed her the letter. Sarah read it over, then handed it back to me. "Not sure how this applies to me?" I shook my head. "That's not the issue. I just find it odd that she was in Delanos at the time the cathedral was attacked. Could she have known?" Sarah frowned. "Think you're chasing dragons, Corin. Your mom is in Delanos all the time. She's been visiting there for years." "Years?" I rubbed my chin. "Why?" "Climbing, of course. She mostly climbs the Serpent Spire, but she's been going to the Tortoise Spire a lot over the last few years. Their culture encourages climbers more, so it's easier to find groups for an expedition. Therefore, you get a lot more veterans, and it's easier to climb higher."
I'd known the parts about the Tortoise Spire having more veteran climbers, but I hadn't even realized that Mother was a climber. "What's she been climbing for?"
"You can't seriously not know that. Did you never read her letters?"
I frowned. "This didn't say anything about the spire. Neither did the one that she sent earlier this year."
"I don't mean those. I'm talking about the ones we sent you back at home, before we came here."
I felt my hands balling into fists. "I haven't gotten any letters in years. Not from her or from you." Sarah's eyes widened just a little.
"You mean, I always thought it was weird that you stopped replying a few years ago, but I just assumed, I thought you didn't want to hear from me."
I stood up, my fists tightening further, and turned toward the door. Sarah stood up too.
"What are you doing, Corin?"
She sounded alarmed. "I'm going to go punch my father in the face." She put a hand on my shoulder. I spun, just barely restraining my urge to take a swing. It's not her fault. I took a breath, stumbling back a step.
"Corin, calm down."
"No." I shook my head. "For once, I'm not going to be calm. This is not okay, Sarah."
"Maybe something just happened with the mail."
"We both know that isn't true. Magnus Rushing Cadence has been screening my mail, apparently for rushing years." I punched a wall. I barely felt it, but Sarah took a step back, raising her hands defensively. I processed that, taking a breath and lowering my hands. "Sorry, Sarah. I'm not angry at you."
"Okay, but you're still scaring me a little, Corin. This isn't like you."
I balled my fists again, but I didn't strike. "Rational. I trusted him. I thought Mother had abandoned me. I thought you had abandoned me." I shook my head. "I sent you letters too. Both of you. More than once."
"We never..."
I nodded. "I know. I sent them by handing them to Father, because he always was the one who went to the courier's office. He probably destroyed them just like he destroyed the ones you sent me. Or maybe he just read them and laughed."
"Corin..."
My mind was running calculations it probably shouldn't have been. At my best estimate, Father was a citrine-level shaper, provided he hadn't been getting stronger somehow like Mother had. I had no chance of beating him in a fair fight.
but as I discovered with Jin, it was quite possible to beat someone of a higher attunement level if I wasn't fighting fair. It wasn't that I wanted to kill my father. I wasn't in that frame of mind. I wanted to hurt him, to humiliate him, to make him understand how much of a monster he was for keeping me away from the rest of my family for all this time. And a part of my mind was angry at Mother, too. Letters were great. Maybe she cared for me just a little bit more than I thought if she'd been writing all this time. In some ways, that hurt more than if she'd abandoned me completely. I'd been worth scribbles on a piece of paper, but not enough for a visit. It had been 3 years since I'd seen her in person. 3 years. Letters didn't forgive that. Maybe she'd written some excuses in there, offered a few pitiful explanations. But ultimately, she could take train rides up to Delanos, apparently repeatedly, but not make time to visit her son. Why? What was so important that she'd be climbing spires rather than visiting her son? I'm sorry, I shook my head. I'm sorry, I'm just... I can't. I fled the room. I didn't jump on a train to Hathridge to go see my father, as tempting as that prospect was. Instead, I went to Karis's room and knocked on the door. He opened it a few moments later, looked me up and down, and gave me a quizzical expression. Corn? Is something wrong? I lowered my head. Yes. I need to be stronger. Karis paused, then slowly nodded. I think I can help with that. We didn't bring Marissa with us this time. I stood on the rooftop across from Karis, hand on Celise Leanne's hilt. I told Karis that I wanted to be stronger, and that was true, but there was a part of me that was just itching for a fight. So, he began, what did you want to practice? An image flashed in my mind. Something I'd been trying not to think about since I got to the school. The smirk on my father's face as I spat blood on the stone and struggled to push myself to my feet, my arms and legs covered in cuts and bruises. It wasn't a particular incident I was remembering. It was an ordinary day of training. Teach me a way to defeat an opponent that's much more powerful than I am. Karis nodded, looking contemplative.
Lots of ways to do that. Given your skill set, the most obvious answer is prepare. You already seem to be doing quite a lot of that.
I shrugged a shoulder, half agreeing with him. I am, but I'm already reaching the point where I'm carrying so many items that the auras are going to start interfering with each other soon. I can be more efficient about that, getting stronger items instead of a bunch of little ones, but I can't carry hundreds of items for every possible scenario.
Doesn't the box help with that? Seems like it's perfect for what you're describing.
It is, but I don't want to rely on it. Other people are going to want to take it from me if they find out I have it, and as you've pointed out, I won't be able to keep it forever. If Rin is alive, she'll probably want it back eventually.
Oh, she's alive. I'm sure of it.
He paused, glancing away for a moment.
Anyway, you're right that the box isn't a permanent solution. Okay. We'll talk about some solutions that don't involve making 100 items.
Thank you.
Get your transference sword. I have an idea.
I went and retrieved the sword, setting Celise Leanne down nearby.
Toss it here for a second.
I threw him the sword. Karis drew the blade, glancing it over.
Good balance. But more importantly, the aura should work for our purposes.
He sheathed it and tossed it back to me. I caught it without difficulty. Karis drew a training sword. He always left his other sword, the one with the silvery aura he'd used against Katashi, in his scabbard.
The foundation of most of my sword techniques is the manipulation of my aura. I use it in a variety of ways, the most basic of which is simply reshaping my aura into a cutting field, like what I taught Marissa.
I nodded. But I can't do that, since I can't manipulate my shroud yet.
Right? But you can manipulate the aura of an existing magical weapon. I've seen you do it. You've got a technique similar to my cutting wave, the one where you swing it and you project a wave of force.
Sure. I just push some transference mana through my hand, which reacts with the aura around my sword and pushes the sword's aura outward. He shook his head.
I think you're doing a little more than that, even if it's not conscious. If it was just making two auras collide, your blade's aura would shift, but it wouldn't fly outward in a crescent shape like that.
That made a degree of sense, but I didn't think I was doing anything else.
Kara swung the practice sword in the air, and a wave of energy rippled out. When I cut the air like that, I'm not just slamming my aura into something and hoping it'll go the right way. I'm shaping my aura into a blade and projecting it in the direction I'm thinking about. My intent determines the dimensions of the shockwave and the direction it goes.
And you think I'm doing the same thing subconsciously?
Right. Which means that you have the ability to shape transference mana, at least to a limited degree.
I frowned at that. I have to be able to manipulate mana to force it outward, but only when I'm physically touching it. I had a little stronger sense for mana while I was inside the spire. The air was so thick with it that I could move the ambient mana just a little, but I drew the sword, inspecting the aura. I don't think I can do anything with this aura. Not without cutting my fingers off, anyway.
Well, figuring out how to protect yourself from your own weapon's aura would be a good training exercise. But for the moment, I think I have a theory on how you're doing what you're doing. The first type of thing I learned to shape was metal, and at first, I couldn't shape it unless I was touching it. The way I learned to work around that was to use a piece of metal, like a sword, to touch whatever I wanted to shape. That made a sufficient connection for me to manipulate the target.
I pondered that. You think that in the instant my transference mana is touching the aura of the blade, I have enough of a connection to shape the blade's aura?
Exactly.
Huh. If that was true, how could I use that? Would that be applicable to other types of mana as well? Could I figure out how to reshape other forms of mana by connecting them with mine? If that was possible, it was going to open up a lot of doors for me in the long run. But I couldn't get too far ahead of myself. All we had for the moment was a hypothesis.
Okay, can we test that? Karis nodded. Sure. It'll be good to figure out how much control you have. That can help determine what techniques I can teach you right now. Try this.
His aura stretched out over his sword. Then he swung it in the air. A shockwave flew out as expected, but it veered sharply to the right, rather than directly following the trajectory of the swing. I immediately understood just how useful that kind of technique could be. Everyone would expect an attack to come directly at them. If he could make a shockwave curve off to the side, that was an extremely useful trick in itself. He could anticipate someone's attempt to dodge or hit another enemy entirely. What else could he do? I was extremely curious, but I needed to focus. I tried mimicking him, swinging in midair and pushing mana out of my hand as usual. The shockwave went straight forward before I could actively concentrate on guiding it another way. And once the shockwave was free of my sword, I couldn't sense any connection to it. But I could sense one ever so briefly when my mana and the sword's aura met. Karis was right. It was faint, near instantaneous, but a connection was there. I tried it again and again, but with the same results. I trained myself with my expectations for how the attack was supposed to work. In order to get it to behave differently, I had to find a way to reshape not just the mana, but how I was thinking about the attack.
Try thinking about me as your target, Karis suggested, but I'm going to stand off to the side rather than in front of you. Swing forward, but try to guide the shockwave toward me.
I nodded. I wasn't even going to mention that a success would mean an attack coming straight toward Karis. I knew by now that my attacks were no threat to him. He was clearly specialized in offensive combat, and he didn't have a traditional shroud, but I was confident he could knock my attacks out of the air with his bare hands if he felt like it. Even with a target in mind, forcing my attack to arc was surprisingly difficult. I swung and swung, pushing shockwave after shockwave out of the sword. In the end, it was a moment of frustration that did it. I didn't think about it, not consciously, like I'd been trying to. I just swung and wanted the aura to move. And it did. It didn't get anywhere near Karis. Not due to his extraordinary skills, but because my aim was way off. The wave curved so hard to the left that it almost made a circle and then flew off into the night air to dissipate. It hadn't been close to what I'd been looking for, but it had worked. at least in the loosest possible sense. I'd gotten my shockwave to move in a different way, and that meant I could connect with my sword's aura. And that was where the real training started. I only had a handful of days left before my final exam. I threw most of that time into learning sword aura manipulation techniques. Once I was in a little better state of mind, Karis went and grabbed Marissa to join us. She was already working on similar techniques, but using her own shroud rather than a weapon's aura. I planned to switch to using my shroud once I had the ability to work with it, but for the moment, this was excellent practice. Karis nodded to us as we began our next lesson.
You both seem to have a solid grasp of the basics of manipulating your aura blade, even if Korin is still cheating a bit.
I smirked. I'm always walking the line between cleverness and cheating. If good tactics qualify me as a cheater, I'll take that label and wear it with pride. After some trial and error, I'd figured out that only being able to sense the aura for an instant wouldn't give me the kind of fine control that I needed in order to aim one of those blade shockwaves properly. To fix that, I'd practiced manifesting a tiny thread of mana connecting my hand to the rune that generated the transference aura. Maintaining the thread required a tiny amount of my mana, but it created a persistent connection that let me sense and manipulate the aura freely. Karis rolled his eyes at my remark.
We're getting started. I've got something a little different in mind today. Marissa, make a blade aura.
Marissa bent her knees in a combat stance and extended her right arm. The shroud enveloping her body shifted, with the section around her arm shifting and elongating into a blade-like shape. When she'd first practiced this, the blade aura had only extended about a length of a hand. Now it was a solid 2 feet, giving her reach comparable to holding a short sword. That made it more difficult to use, but vastly more dangerous. Presumably, she'd continue learning to extend it further as her skill level increased.
Good. Korin, you can draw your sword as well.
I followed his instructions, then focused for a moment to create a thread of mana connecting to the rune. After that, I fell into a default guard stance.
Now, both of you slash. No need to project a wave.
We slashed through the air. I grinned as I heard the whirring noise from the mana moving through the air. Magic was awesome.
Now, let's say you hit something with that slash. What portion of the blade aura is actually going to be impacting the target?
Not much, Mara replied. Probably less than half. It's a double-sided blade aura, and we're only hitting them with one side.
Karis snapped his fingers.
Precisely. There's nothing wrong with using a double-edged blade aura as your starting point. In fact, I encourage it, especially when you're still learning control, or if you're fighting too rapidly to adjust it.
But you can adjust it. I lifted my own sword, pondering. Mara could make a single-edged blade and save mana, sure, but this sword is already emitting mana all around it. That's just how the runes work.
I'm not talking about saving mana, although that's a valid approach.
Karis grinned, lifting his own practice sword. I activated my attunement. I could see his aura just a little bit without my attunement active, but it was much easier while it was on. Karis projected his aura over the practice sword, mimicking the style of my own blade. Then as I watched, the aura shifted, with one half of the blade's aura moving to overlap with the other half. I blinked as I realized what was happening.
You're pushing all the mana into one side so that it hits harder.
Karis nodded, then shifted his stance with the point facing toward us. The aura, too, shifted, until nearly the entire aura was concentrated on the point.
I call it aura compression. It's similar to what Mara does when she focuses mana in her hands before she punches someone. It's just to a greater extreme.
And my whole hand ain't hitting anyone. And it'd be more like if I just put my mana right on knuckles.
Marissa flexed her fingers on her left hand.
I should try that.
I'd be careful with that, Karis cautioned. When you're focusing mana in your hand, you're also reinforcing it, so that you don't break your fingers. You might be able to concentrate some more on the points of contact, but don't abandon the rest of your hand entirely. With the blade aura, though, it's extended beyond your hand. You don't need to worry about hurting yourself. You can make the aura as dense as you can manage. Try it.
I pushed the mana on my blade. The transference sword was a saber, meaning it only had a single striking edge.
Moving all the aura to one side was an intuitive choice, and I wasn't sure why I hadn't considered it earlier. Everyone always seemed to have double-sided blade auras, regardless of the style of sword, so I just sort of assumed it was normal. Always question everything. It was a core part of my philosophy, but that didn't mean I was perfect at it. I was only human. Maybe that was something